see here. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 is the first verse with the purple. Sri Badarayana Uvacha. Indram evam samadhisya.
Indram evam samadhisya.
Bhagavan visvabhavana.
Bhagavan visvabhavana.
Pasyatam animeshanam.
Pasyatam animeshanam.
Tattaivantar dhadhe hari.
Tattaivantar dhadhe hari.
Indram evam samadhisya.
Indram evam samadhisya.
Bhagavan visvabhavana.
Bhagavan visvabhavana.
Pasyatam animeshanam.
Pasyatam animeshanam.
Tatraivantar dadhe hari.
Tatraivantar dadhe hari.
Jai. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, after instructing Indra in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the cause of the cosmic manifestations, then and there disappeared from the presence of the onlooking devas, or demigods. Tata. Yachito devar
Yachito devar
Yashira tarvano maham Modamana uvachedam
Modamana uvachedam
Prahasanniva
bharata.
O King Parikshit, following the Lord's instruction, the devas approached Adichi, the son of Atharva. He was very liberal, and when they begged him to give his body, he at once partially agreed. However, just to hear religious instruction from them, he smiled and jokingly spoke as follows. Api vrinda dhaka dhuyam na janita saririnam samstayam yastva vidroho dusahas chetanapaha. O elevated demigods, at the time of death, severe unbearable pain takes away the consciousness of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Don't you know about this pain? Jivivishunam jivanam atma preshta ihepsita ka utsaheta tamdahim datum Bhikshamanaya Vishnave. In this material world, every living entity is very much addicted to his material body. Struggling to keep his body forever, everyone tries to protect it by all means, even at the sacrifice of all his possessions. Therefore, who would be prepared to deliver his body to anyone, even if it were demanded by Lord Vishnu? Purport. It is said, Atmanam sarvato rakshit tato dharmam tato dhanam. One must protect his body by all means. Then he may protect his religious principles and thereafter his possessions. This is the natural desire of all living entities. No one wants to give up his body unless it is forcibly taken away. Even though the demigods said they were demanding Dadichi's body for their benefit, in accordance with the order of Lord Vishnu, Dadichi superficially refused to give them his body. Sri Deva Uchu. Kingnu tad dushtyajam brahman pungsam bhutanukampinam bhavadvidanam mahatam punyasloke jakarmanam. The demigods replied, O exalted Brahmana, pious persons like you, whose activities are praiseworthy, are very kind and affectionate to people in general. What can such pious souls give for the benefit of others? They can give everything, including their bodies. Nunam swarta paroloko na veda parasankatam yadi vedana yachet neti naha yad ishwara. Translation: those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing of others' pain. But if the beggar knew the difficulty of the giver, he would not ask for anything. Similarly, he who is able to give charity does not know the beggar's difficulty, for otherwise he would not refuse to give the beggar anything he might want as charity. Report. The verse describes two people, one who gives charity and one who begs for it. A beggar should not ask charity from a person who is in difficulty. Similarly, one who is able to give charity should not deny a beggar. These are the moral instructions of the Shastra. Chanakya Pandit says, San nimitte varam tyago vinashe niyate sati. Everything within this material world will be destroyed, and therefore one should use everything for good purposes. If one is advanced in knowledge, he must always be prepared to sacrifice anything for a better cause. At the present moment, the entire world is in a dangerous position under the spell of a godless civilization. The Krishna consciousness movement needs many exalted, learned persons who will sacrifice their lives to revive God consciousness throughout the world. We therefore invite all men and women advanced in knowledge. To join the Krishna consciousness movement and sacrifice their lives for the great cause of reviving the God consciousness of the human society. Sivashi Vacha Dharmam Vasrotu Kamena Yuyame Pratyudharita Esa Vapriyam Atmanam Tyajantam Santyajamyaham. The great sage Dadichi said, just to hear from you about religious principles, I refuse to offer my body to you at your request. Now, although my body is extremely dear to me, I must give it up for your better purposes, since I know that it will leave me today or tomorrow. Thus end the verses 1 through 7, chapter 10, canto 6, translation, purport, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, spoken on, what day is it today, 14? 13? Huh? 13th of May, 2008, Christabdo, in the holy year of our Lord Chaitanya, 522, Gorabdo. At the Gornitai Temple in Cape Town, South Africa. Very interesting. There was a great sage who had done so many austerities and prayers to Narayana, to the form of Krishna. So his body had become very powerful because of penances, austerities, and devotional service. So Lord Vishnu had told the devas that if they wanted to defeat Kritasura, they have to beg this sage to donate his body. And Vishwakarma is going to make a special weapon from it, a kind of lightning thunderbolt which is so powerful, it can kill the demon. It's not just an ordinary lightning bolt. It's spiritually imbibed and empowered by the sage's body. You don't have to worry, this weapon will never fail. So then they went to the sage and asked him to give his body. So first he was testing them. He said, everybody is so much attached to their body. Who donates their body? And some people here now, right? They donate a kidney or something. You know. After death, they donate some parts of their body. But it's really hard to find anyone living. What if they give the whole body? Who does that? So this is a very rare request. But this Dadichi, so you want to test them. And he first gave him a little bit of a hard time to see what they would say. Then he admitted that actually I was just testing you. Since we're supposed to use our body for a higher cause, and our body anyway is going to perish sooner or later. So now if I can use my body for the higher cause of benefiting the entire universe and all of the humanity and all the people, then why should I hesitate? So this is basically what happened. And Prabhupada is also here mentioning that we should invite all men and women advanced in knowledge to join the Krishna Consciousness Movement and sacrifice their lives for the great cause of reviving the God consciousness of human society. Although we're not asking anybody to give up their life, donate their bones or anything, but to give their energy and their remainder of their life activity to focus on reviving God consciousness of the human society. These things are all quite amazing because people are so selfish nowadays that even to just ask a donation, you know, people hesitate quite a bit. Here it also mentions that somebody who's a miser, who is suffering a lot, to give a donation. Now some people are really needy and they can't afford to give a donation. But some people are quite well off. It's no big deal for them to give a donation. So it says that the beggar really understood. If someone is in difficulty, probably wouldn't ask the person in difficulty to give a donation. But if in the same way, it says that the donor, if he knew the difficulty of the person, the beggar, then he may also not hesitate to help in our... The brahmacharis anyway are beggars, so they don't, that the question of them giving anything doesn't really arise. But Grihasthas have various degrees of wealth. So it's quite, now we heard that in like Chopati, if there was a Grihastha, or even in Mayapur and in Bangladesh, there were some cases recently where some devotee had some kind of disease or something, and the medical treatment, it would cost 100,000 rupees, which is, I don't know how many rand that is, maybe $2,000 US, so that's what, about 14,000, 15,000 rand. So I don't know, in India that's a lot of money, I don't know here how much more that is, but pretty good here too. So then, but somehow the different grihasthas and devotees, they took up a collection to raise some money for this this child who had the disease, and the parents wanted to get the child cured. Some more wealthy grihastha, they gave more, some gave less. So this idea of helping people when they're in need, It's being practiced today in the Vaishnava society in many cases, especially for medical treatment. And the one vice president of the temple, his daughter had a hole in the heart. She needed an open heart operation to close the hole. And which is open heart, you can imagine, it's a bit expensive. It's also like maybe about 16,000, 17,000 rand. So. But different devotees pitched in according to their capacity, and they had the operation. Now the girl's quite healthy and okay. So this is one way that the Grihasthas may help. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a pastime where, well, I think it's in Chaitanya Bhagavad actually, that Suklambar Brahmachari, he had a practice as a Brahmachari. He wasn't living in an ashram, he lived in his own ashram. He was self, I don't know what you call it, like a, not self-sufficient brahmachari, but at least an autonomous kind of brahmachari, not living in an ashram. But he would survive by begging. So in those days he would beg 5 houses a day. So then, whatever he got from the 5 houses, if he had nothing, then that day he won't eat. So like, you know, he just 5 houses, and whatever he got, that he considered to be Krishna's mercy on him. So sometimes, usually when someone goes begging, a lot of people, they give out the lousy things. It's like if you go to the supermarket and say you want to get some vegetables, they'll say, well, it was a pile outside, they're going a little bit off, you know, to cut out the bad parts. I used to go to the wholesale fruit market and vegetable market and beg some boxes for Food for Life. And obviously they're going to give you the ones that are going to go bad. But that's okay. I mean, they're not bad yet. I mean, you can still cut them and they're ready, but they're all really right. It's like use it or lose it. But we used to pick up a whole pickup truck of a pile of half a ton of fruits and vegetables. I used to cook 8 kinds of fruit chutney and flavored halva and things for the Sunday feast, for what we pick. But they tend to get, you know, that's just so. Suklambar Brahmachari, he went to the one house, and then the wife said, there's a beggar here asking for some alms. So the householder said, eating his big pile of prasadam, and said, well, give him the ashes from our stove. What do you think of that, Brother Krishna? What are you going to do with ashes? Use as a fertilizer for your banana plant. You? So figure, you know, some of you take ashes, okay, forget it, you know. But Sukumar Brahmachari thought, anyway, this guy is such a miser. At least if I take his ashes, he'll benefit something by giving. So he said, okay, give me your ashes. Just stop talking about it and do it. I want to see you actually do it, you know. Just to give mercy to the Grihastha. Okay, I'll take your ashes. One time he had begged from the 5 houses, and then so sometime they give that chip flat rice, or this is the flat rice, and you get nice vulgar, but some when they get old, it's broken, or rice, broken rice. So they gave away the lousy stuff. Just, okay, you know, it's not very useful for us, see why it's bigger. You know. And Lord Chaitanya came the other way, he saw that Suklambar Brahmachari had his bags. What'd you get today? You knew everything about him. No, it was alright. Let me see. Oh, my favorite, flat rice. Just like Sudama Vipra, the classmate of Krishna in Ujjain, when they were studying together, then Krishna took his flat rice. So this time, Lord Chaitanya reached in the bag to eat some flat rice. But then when Sukhambhava Brahmacharya realized he's going to eat that flat rice. He said, no, for you I'll take some good stuff. For himself he accepted whatever they gave, but if he's going to, Lord Chaitanya, he'll go and bake some, you know, really good chastise the Grihasa to give something good or something, you know, for Lord Chaitanya. But Lord said, no, what's ever good for my devotee is good for me. They're having a tug of war over the bay. So Sukhamara put it behind him, the hind, but Lord Chaitanya is so tall. He's like 7 feet tall, hands go down to his knees when he's standing, so he reaches over and grabs the bag and, oh, so good! So, just begging different pastimes about begging, because in the Vedic culture, the brahmanas and the brahmacharis, they would beg. If Prabhupada didn't want us, because now in modern society begging is not considered so nicely, unless you're like in Thailand or Sri Lanka, and the Buddhist monks go with their begging bowl and they accept it. Everybody's come, they put a little table outside, and then they, as the monks come, they put something in their begging bowl. That's like accepted still today. But in India, even India, the begging is not well received. So Prabhupada said, better we give them something. So when we give them a book, they give us some donation. So we're not giving them, not just taking from them, we're giving them something. So in some way, somehow we do some exchange. So that's generally how we do. We give something and we give prasadam or we give a book or whatever the people like, they give some donation back. That way they benefit in two ways, by giving the donation as well as by getting the prasadam. So these are, we were talking once that when you give a donation, there are many kinds of donations you can give, like somebody may have donated the fruit or the vegetables or the grains. If we put a basket in front of the deities, the people are invited to donate some food, some fresh milk, some grain, something. So in case they don't like to give money, they can give grains or some food. In front of the Chicago temple, they have a big basket. Different temples, I've seen that. And people come and give donations. Every time we come to the temple, I mean, here there's not even a donation box that I can see. Maybe there is. Is there one? Except stolen. You push a button, it comes out. Huh? That's okay for night time, so nobody runs off with it, but in India, the Hyundai boxes are so heavy, nobody can walk off with it too easily. Big, massive steel monsters. Once someone tried to steal the Jagannath Pundi, and then Jagannath did some lila with him. He got caught. Yeah, well, it's good to empty it out every day. I mean, I've seen hundi boxes filled with donations, and sometimes they do get stolen if you're not careful. You have to chain them down or something. But it's part of our culture that when we come to see the Lord, we should give Him a donation. Just like it's His culture, if He reveals Himself to you, He'll give you a boon. So, let's mention nectar of devotion. Going to Bangladesh, so some places they're more in this giving mode. Bangladesh is maybe one of the poorest countries in the world. But everybody there is in the mood of that there's a sadhu or a devotee or so they like to give a donation. And sometimes some elderly, we call them budimas, they're like elderly ladies, grandmother or something, she comes with her, she has the end of her sari tied in inside there, there's a little bit of money. She maybe has 3 rupees, and peels out 1 rupee or 1 taka and gives it. But something they give. It's like this time on the safari, we got something like in those donations, like 80,000 takas. All little crumpled bills. And, but everybody gives something. It's like maybe 1 rupee or what they call their takas. Or some people who are more wealthy, they give 100 or 500. So there's like 10 takas is like 1 rand, more or less. Maybe a little more than a rand, but everybody's in that mood. So that's something very auspicious. West Bengal, they're not as generous as Bangladesh. So it's part of the culture there, to give something to Brahmana, to the devis. But generally that's where people just give whatever they feel like giving. It's a pretty rare thing that somebody goes up and asks, could you please give me your body? I want to. And the Dichi is so powerful that he can actually leave his body and give him the body and go on. It's not an ordinary feat to reincarnate at will. He said, I refuse to offer my body at your request. No, although my body is extremely dear to me, I must give it up for your better purposes, since I know it will leave me today or tomorrow. But the idea that in our life we should try to do something to help the world. Most people, they're just thinking how I can enjoy sense gratification. But to actually do something that benefits the whole world, that is not... some people are doing that, but let's consider that it's for some material purpose and it's in the mode of goodness. I mean, just like there's people who are very much concerned about the environment. Sometimes they do demonstrations and they make some appeal that to the government to stop doing things which are environmentally destructive to the world. So that even giving some demonstration or some present, thing like that, that's also a kind of donation of their time and energy. So there are people who are for some better cause, at least what they consider to be a better cause. Maybe in some cases it's not always really a better cause, but like Sitaram was telling me they did some demonstrations when he was out of Krishna consciousness. Questionable whether all those demonstrations were really beneficial, but his intention was good. So this is something we try to use our body to spread Krishna consciousness. In fact, what Chaitanya, he doesn't say like necessarily give up everything, but even people could be grihasthas or married householders, or but they do yukta vairagya. They do their activities in such a way that Krishna is pleased and Krishna consciousness is spread. We saw last night many different grihasthas were doing namahatas and programs and the slideshow, which was able to help many people. For some people, they become some of our brahmacharis here. They've dedicated their life for helping people, helping humanity by awakening them into Krishna consciousness. That's people appreciate, in India people appreciate that. Sometimes they say, especially like a Westerner, they come to India for preaching, they appreciate you're coming from maybe a more materially developed country, and so you're taking all these austerities in order to spread our culture, so spread the Vedic culture. Some of them there, they appreciate it. They said, I couldn't do it. One time Prabhupada was talking, he got a letter from a couple, and they're writing, they're in the West somewhere, maybe America, I'm not sure. They said, we want to be your disciples. We're aspiring to be your disciples. And we're trying to chant 16 rounds, but sometimes we fail some of the workload or different problems, and we try to make it up. And we want to follow the four principles, but sometimes some of our friends, they somehow by their association we break some principle. And we feel really bad about it, and we're trying to really get a better association and practice. Like, it was a really graphic letter. I mean, graphic. All the different ways they were having spiritual problems. That's Grihastha is. When Prabhupada got this letter, but you might think, well, what would Prabhupada think in a letter like this? These people are falling. No, but Prabhupada actually was so moved that they're trying to be Krishna conscious in spite of so much bad association, bad environment, different bad habits, that he started to cry. But how these people are making such a sacrifice to be Krishna conscious. It's so difficult in the West because the environment is like that, so materialistic. And the whole day he was talking about this letter. In the evening and late afternoon, there was some really rich, aristocratic, industrialist Indians. So some class of Indians, from Rajasthan, they're called Marwaris, or sometimes some Gujaratis. They tend to be vegetarian, to be pious. But many of them are donors. They're very nice people. But not all of them take up Krishna consciousness sadhana. So you read, look at how these people are struggling to be Krishna conscious. They're coming from a meat-eating environment. They're coming from an environment where people take intoxication. And they're going through all these austerities. For them, it's a big sacrifice to try to be Krishna conscious. Then he turned around and said, what are you doing? What are you doing? What sacrifice are you making to practice Krishna consciousness, to practice bhakti yoga? They were like, shocked, you know. They didn't expect to have it turn around on them. And then they were sincere people. They thought about it and said, actually, we are born, you know, vegetarian, so what's no big, in a vegetarian family, no big deal for us. That's how we grew up. The idea of eating meat or fish never came even in our minds. But I take tea, which is a mild intoxicant, and I never even tried to stop taking tea. I haven't done any sacrifice. So they started appreciating that how these Vaishnavas, they are doing a sacrifice to be spiritually conscious. They're controlling their senses. So like this sometimes, that incident revealed many things to how compassionate Prabhupada was. How much he appreciated the sacrifice that anyone did. And then how he turned it around, used it even to enliven these very aristocratic, vegetarian, sattvic Indians to go a little step forward and be Krishna conscious. Try to make some, you know, do some japa or something. I remember one time he was telling one of these businessmen had a big Radha Krishna temple in the house. But he hired some priest for, I don't know, maybe 1,000 rupees a month. He comes and throws a few tulsis at the feet and waves an arti. And he said, why don't you do the worship? I said, me do that? I'm a businessman. No, but you should be able to, I'll teach you how to do it. I'll give you the mantras and everything. You should, whenever possible, you should do the worship. And he was like, you know, shocked. The idea, never thought, you know, just like all our, most of our grihasthas, they don't hire priests, they all do the puja themselves. And, but here's some wealthy guy, millionaire, so he just hires some priest to do the proxy puja. He comes in and maybe does a 2-minute prayer and leaves. The Prabhupada said, no, you should spend, you know, half an hour, do some puja. And that was, so I would just see how Prabhupada was trying to get these people to be more God conscious, to go up a little, whatever level we're at, come up a step or two or whatever, gradually go up. And that way Prabhupada was appreciating when people were trying to come up. This Dadichi is like already a super level, super advanced personality. So the Vishnu knew that he was so renounced that he couldn't give up his whole body when they convinced him it was for the benefit of the universe. It's a demon that could destroy the universe, and his body could be used, his bones could be used for defeating this demon. So, okay, if my body is of use to you, you can have it. pretty amazing, profound kind of a donation, yeah? Amazing history. So compared to that, Lord Chaitanya is not asking people to give their bones and give their bodies and that's it, but they do chant Hare Krishna, eat Krishna prasadam, read the Bhagavad Gita. Lord Chaitanya's basic instruction was Bolo Krishna, Bocho Krishna, Koro Krishna, Shika, chant Hare Krishna, study Krishna's teachings, and worship Krishna. And by doing those activities, then you'll be able to go back to Krishna and you'll be able to help the universe. So. Just like nowadays, we don't ask students to leave their university. And we ask them to continue university while you're there, try to make some other students Krishna conscious, try to help us organize the Bhakti Yoga Club. This is what, for many reasons. One is so that the better use of their time to help make the student devotees. Part of it is that if we don't have them finish and they come out, then the parents complain to the university and everybody complains. The university will block us from teaching that. Then also most people get married later on if they don't finish their education, then they complain that I left my education because it's all your fault. Different things like that. So, in fact, in Chaupati, Radhanathaswami has, when they want to, if someone wants to, even after they finish their education, he says, you work for 6 months, see how you like it, and then come back. So that way, there's less rate of falling out. And they've already experienced what a lousy thing it is to work. Because usually your boss gives you all the crazies in the office, you know, it's not too easy. But later on, if they find some personality clashes in the ashram, it won't be, you know, they know, well, this is anyway better than that. But that's a pretty rare. I don't know if anyone else does that. Usually so much in need of manpower, but they have a very reserved program. What's amazing also is this Vritrasura, he's a devotee. He's a demon devotee. He was cursed by Durga to become a demon because he kind of inappropriately offered some suggestion to Shiva. It wasn't bad intention, but it wasn't considered appropriate by Durga, so by Parvati, so she cursed it. He apologized and accepted a curse. And then there was some rishi that wanted to finish off Indra. So he tried to create an enemy that would kill Indra, but he slightly slurred on one of his Sanskrit verses. And therefore, instead of coming as an enemy of Indra, became as Indra as his enemy. Slight different than the slight pronunciation. So that means Indra will kill him, but he gives him a hard fight. So Vritrasura got born as this demon that had to fight Indra. But he was at the same time always preaching to Indra, telling him, you know, about Krishna. It was very unusual. It was very interesting how Vritrasura, although somehow he was made into an antagonistic demon, but somehow he always remained Krishna conscious in spite of that. He had to fight Indra, that was like the reason he was created. Sometimes Indra got so frustrated, didn't know what to do. He's just like, this guy's such a tough demon. He said, you shouldn't lose heart. In winning or losing, we have to go do dharma and so on. Give some nice teaching. But you're not able to come to the class every day. Sneak a peek at the chapter. It's really interesting. So any questions? Here, how many are determined to utilize their thoughts, words, and deeds in Krishna's service, help uplift humanity? Wow, He's still thinking about it. But we appreciate it. See? Because of the sacrifice of the devotees, that's how other people become awakened. Any question? Michael, before I leave, you got a question? So we make it, the problem made it very easy. Use whatever skills you have for Krishna. If you're a musician, do music for Krishna. If you're a lawyer, I met a lawyer last night. Mia's a lawyer, right? Use your legal understanding for Krishna. Whatever your abilities, some have your cook for Krishna. You know, don't have to do something like completely against the grain. This is pretty rare situation, like giving your bones and body. But we don't ask people. We don't ask people to commit suicide or do anything like that. We're not one of those like dangerous like Christian sects that have everybody do mass suicides and things. But we're actually against suicide. But to dedicate your body, your mind, your deeds in Krishna's service. When we take sannyas, we're given a tridandi, three-stick pole, and that's supposed to represent the thoughts, words, and deeds, and a little curve in the top is the intelligence, guided by a higher spiritual intelligence, use our thoughts, words, and deeds in Krishna's service. To some extent, Vihastas and the others can also do the same thing, but within the parameters of their ashram. Vajra Krishna, any question? Usually when we go out collecting, we have a photo album or something. We show what we're doing with the money, how they're, show the basic a pie chart or something of the expenses in the previous year. So they understand is that with every activity you need land, you need manpower, you need organization, you need capital. So you want them to be able to identify that they want to do this thing. They want Rath Yatra, or they want to feed the guests. Or whatever it is, find out what's inspiring them, and then you present it in that way. Someone's into education, so how does educating the masses who are distributing books on the Rath Yatra. And this way, most people, most reasonable people, they can appreciate if you're being transparent with it. But I also met one guy. I went into his office in the 1970s when on a live membership campaign, 1,111 rupees in those days was a live member. So this guy, I tried to show my photo album, but he didn't look. He just started blasting me. He started shouting at me and saying that people are cheaters and you know, everything possibly you could think of to try to blow me away. I don't know what happened. I decided to weather out the storm, you know. After the guy for about 10 minutes, he was saying, I don't believe in this, I don't know, people are cheaters, you know. Then after he finished, he said, my dear sir, I want to, it's not correct what you're saying. We're not cheating anybody. We're actually nice. Then I showed all my pictures. He thought that with all the shouting and heavy, you know, dealing, he just like blow me off. But then soon, you know, I just went on, undeterred, unfazed, and showed him all the nice things we're doing. And he was like amazed. Then he said, you know, I was just testing you. You're a crazy guy, you know. I was just testing you. You pay, how much you got to pay? Tell me. So he gave a donation, became a life member. Yes?
She mentioned that wherever we're at, we should try and take like 2 steps forward. So, where can we find the inspiration to push, do a little more, give a little more, actually give more people's lives?
Somebody asked me the same thing in England recently, a few days ago at the retreat. And that is really, I don't know why, it took me a little bit by surprise, because I never had that thought. The Prabhupada was giving us so much all the time, how he made the sacrifice to go to the West, to bring Krishna consciousness, how, like when I heard from, I joined in 68, so in 66, 67 I missed those years in 22nd Avenue in New York. I came in when Prabhupada was in Montreal. He lost his visa for America. And then Brahmananda was telling us that in 67 he had a stroke. And that he was basically more or less paralyzed from the neck down. So he couldn't, we had to be sponge bathed, and we had to help him to nature's call, everything that the devotees had to do for him. But his head was still working. It wasn't paralyzed in the head. So while he was non-stop preaching to them, while being paralyzed, I mean, most people, if you get paralyzed, you're pretty much bedridden for a while, you know. But he was like, he had the head left, it was like Victor Sorg, he gets his limbs of his body cut off, and he's still fighting. The Prabhupada was still giving, even though he was, when I heard that, I just couldn't help but cry. And I've seen so many things that the Prabhupada gave so much, compared to that, what am I doing? It's insignificant. Mm-hmm. We're so much indebted to so many of our Prabhupada, maybe other spiritual masters, so that to do something to give Krishna, because Prabhupada said the way you can repay me is by being Krishna conscious and helping others to be Krishna conscious. So I have a sense of indebtedness so great that not that even that's adequate. I'm not breaking, I don't think it's adequate, but at least that hadn't ever been an issue with me, that I'm just thinking how I still have so much in debt, I can't pay it back. But that's what inspires me, is this feeling, is just remembering how much Prabhupada sacrificed and gave us. And I owe it to him to try to do the same. On one hand, of course, also from 1996, when we had the Prabhupada centennial, then after that I started thinking that, you know, devotees also, they're also sacrificing a lot, and they're struggling to be devotees, and that somehow we had to take better care of the devotees at ISKCON. That was also kind of another impetus. And then you see people, it's like one lady came up to me and she told me that, I want to thank you so much. I live in a far corner of the city, away from the ISKCON temple, and my husband takes the car to go to work, and I can't, you know, take me 2 hours to go there by bus. I have 3 kids. I really can't get to the temple much, just on some festival days, and it's very difficult living alone, you know, with your family far away from any temple association. But you started these bhakti riksha groups. And just down the street from my house, we have one. I'm able to go there. Now I'm chanting 16 rounds. I'm doing my daily devotional service. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of guidance and inspiration from that. I just want to thank you so much for doing this program. So those things help too. Maybe it should be selfish, but if somebody appreciates and they actually, you see that it's helping them. It's kind of a combination of compassion, gratitude, inspiration, I don't know. Indebtedness to Prabhupada and others. And compassion and the fallen souls. Apart from that, I get a real taste from talking about Krishna. Maybe there's a little selfishness in it. It's very blissful to talk about Krishna. Some people ask me, how do you travel? How do you get the energy? But I get the energy. Sometimes someone mentioned that they told me I was falling asleep, you know, and then I start giving class and it says somebody get all filled with energy. And so preaching, talking about Krishna, not that we preach down to anybody, but just talking, explaining glories of Krishna, it gives a lot of energy. So even if you just like to do it for the bliss, why should you be deprived? That's what my secretary, see, they're doing all the, I'm just sitting and doing the blissful work of preaching, and they have to organize, you know, get the clothes washed, get the visas made, have the booking inform the next temple, do the packing, unpacking. So some of these are very capable preachers, but they're not preaching. They're helping me preach, but then it gets a bit dry after a while. So I have to release them so they can do some direct preaching. Sitaram, oh, I didn't see you. You snuck in there. You were there all along?
Yes, Maharaj.
Behind Mahendra.
When novices enter Krishna consciousness and the situation of the status quo in the temple is not really enlivened by the tools, it's going to be very damaging for the young people. So the responsibility for those who have taken up the calling of being a Vaishnava and remaining continually infused, how to maintain that level, you know, understanding that I am reflecting everything that Shri Prabhupada has presented. So I have to be conscientious.
Well, new devotees, they should try to associate with a positive association, people that are enlivened and blissful in their service. There are some people that tend to be overcritical, complain about things all the time. And it's called fault finding. It's one of the things we're supposed to avoid doing, mentioned nectar of devotion. That should be a very constructive criticism, or a very constructive, because just pointing out people's deficiencies doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get inspired to improve. It could also even discourage them. But rather to try to point out the good things in other people, and then when they're in line. We had an exercise once in the GBC, and everybody had to make a constructive criticism to another GBC. But before we did that, we had to say two appreciations about them. And that was interesting, because you know they're going to come and tell you something that they don't like about what you're doing. But they first told you two things that they liked what you're doing. So by doing that, it actually, even when they told you the negative thing, it was more digestible, because it was like you could appreciate they had an objective view, but weren't just like being holier than thou, and I, you know, I'm right and you're always wrong, and so it's my duty to tell you how wrong you are. But you could appreciate, okay, they could, it seemed to be a more of a balanced view. But something that's very important, that if we're going to make criticism, it should be very constructive, we should be very appreciative of the good things they're doing. It's not a black and white thing, you know, unless, Maya is black and Krishna is white. So, Suja, Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like the darkness. So, even there may be areas that we could improve in a temple, in an ashram, there may be so many areas we can improve. It doesn't mean that some of them are worshipping Krishna, they're having aartis, they're having tulsi puja, they're eating prasadam, they're doing outreach program. Well, there may be many things. So there may be one or two things. Maybe the bathrooms aren't cleaned as well they should be, or the dealings between devotees aren't as positive. So there's always going to be some kind of area where we can improve. And that's part of devotional service. But we want to present in such a way that people are enthused to try to improve, that they realize, okay, we're doing something right by being here and by performing our devotional service, but we can do better. And maybe if we did better, and even offering our criticism or a suggestion, we can also do that in a better way. Like sometimes, I remember like Prabhupada, there was this devotee and he was always creating a little bit of trouble. At the same time, he was a very good musician. So then he was playing some music, and then Prabhupada, he just took that and said, you're a very good singer and you do good music. Why don't you travel around the world and just sing Krishna's glories and attract people by your music? And he got so inspired, really. Wow, yeah. He went off, playing on his guitar, and he was like totally blissed out. And everyone else like this. Sigh of relief, and wow. This guy is causing us so much trouble. Prabhupada got up enthused, didn't say a negative thing, and just found out, engaged him in a better way. And here he was just getting on our case all the time and pointing out this fault and that fault in such a way that he actually started getting discouraged that maybe I'm doing nothing right. This guy only sees bad things in me. So sometimes we want to do things in such a way that we can enliven the devotees also. So these are techniques, and they have a leadership training course, and I didn't take it, but it has things like this where this was from the group, where you learn how to listen to people, hear their point of view, and how to give them advice in such a way that they actually become enthused to implement it. And it's usually, as you said, maybe that in some ashrams, it's usually one or two people who tend to be a little more critical, more negative, and there's some others who are better and very enlivening. And so sometimes if you see that the critical one is like bending the ear of the new devotee, you might warn them, that this devotee tends to be a little bit overcritical, but it's really, well-intentioned and everything. Maybe you should associate with this other devotee more. He's got a more of a positive outlook and can help you. There's different ways of dealing with it. We want to present things in such a way that people get enlivened by it. When you have an Ishtagosti, you have maybe some kind of a committee, senior devotees, and you have brainstorming and discuss, strategic management, strategic planning. Then you have to see what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, what's the other things, your opportunities and your challenges. Your obstacles, and you go through all these exercises, and you find, it's not like a black and white thing, but you do have so many positive things, so many strengths, with our books, our prasadam, our deities, our, maybe like here in Cape Town, you have these college programs and prasadam distribution, and this is a very cosmopolitan city with many different, like you go like in Chatsworth, it's mainly Indians. So here you see people from the different kind of backgrounds. So it's maybe that's our strengths. Maybe we have our weaknesses also. Maybe there's less senior devotees, and you go through and find out. So then you make plans. Okay, we invite some senior devotees to come, or we get the senior devotees that are in the community to come and give classes sometimes. What they can do to help. You make your plans. You make your goals. How to build on your strengths and how to get over the weaknesses. So it's more, we're doing this now in India with Bhakti Chudra Maharaj and everybody. We have this professional, he's a college professor on strategic planning and strategic management, and so he's giving us so. We've been through it a few times with Braja Vihar and others, but now there's a new wave, slightly new, more or less the same stuff, but it's enlivening everybody. Slightly different perspective. It's good to do things like that and try to find out where you can improve and what you can do, and just be when people do something right, then appreciate it. And if it's delaying and slow, then you know, come up with some strategy how to fix it. Radharaman looks very meditative now. Our new manager. I go on a japa walk last night, but then they said don't walk after dark, and it gets, I thought I'd try to take an early morning walk, but it doesn't get light here until quite late. So anybody has to talk to me before I go? Raja Krishna. What city?
Santa Fe.
No, we have some devotees in Santa Fe, I'm pretty sure. Santa, but I don't know the geography so much. I heard the name Santa Fe. Isn't that northern side? Northern of Argentina? In fact, you see, Ekanath Gora's mother is from St. Louis. I'll give you Ekanath Gora's number. He's from Argentina. He's the president now in the Guayaquil. His mother's a justice of the peace or some kind of magistrate in a place called St. Louis. I think Santa Fe is not too far from that. But maybe. But they have a scattering around the world. The person that's in charge of the congregational development in Argentina, name is Sankirtaneshwar. And he would know. He's a student, elderly lady. If you want to give me your email, I can. You're ahead of me. I can write to her. We have a. In my office, we have a devotee care division trying to help the devotees. And I got two devotees who are on, two or three who are in the Spanish wing, two or three who are in the Russian, and the rest in English. So I can have the Spanish speaking ones. Thank you very much.